From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. U.S. bombs in Libya have led to a strong response from Capitol Hill. President Obama tried to answer criticism today that he has not consulted with Congress about U.S. action in Libya. He held a conference call with congressional leaders. We're going to talk through some events of the week with our political commentators, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. Welcome back, E.J.
Good to be here.
And sitting in for David Brooks this week, we're joined by Linda Chavez. She's a syndicated columnist and chairwoman of the Center for Equal Opportunity. Hello to you, Linda.
Hello to you.
And let's talk about the back and forth about who will command the mission in Libya. NATO now preparing to take over the no-fly operation after much back and forth on that. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talked about that last night. Let's take a listen.
In the days ahead, as NATO assumes command and control responsibilities, the welfare of those civilians will be of paramount concern.
E.J. Dionne, do you think there is any way to fulfill this mission of protecting civilians without getting enmeshed in a civil war in Libya?
I hope so, and I think so. I mean, we've already done something very important, I think, which is to prevent what could have been a real slaughter of the rebels in Benghazi. And I think that when we look back, we will be glad, we Americans, who are involved in this coalition will be glad we have done that. But it's very hard to figure out where the end game of this is. My Washington Post colleague, Gene Robinson, wrote this morning that a lot of people, including him and myself included, are confused about the rationale, goals, tactics, and strategy here. It's hard to know exactly where this ends. And I think that's where the president can do some more explaining.
Well, Linda Chavez, on that point, has the president muddied the waters by saying at the same time that we're there to protect civilians that also Gaddafi must go?
Well, I think that is part of the problem. I think our aims are not clearly defined there. And part of the problem was we dithered for a while, and it would have been a lot easier, I think, 3 weeks earlier had we gone in. Now we do actually have a full-fledged on-the-ground civil war going on between rebels and Gaddafi's forces that had time to move into areas that they might not otherwise had it. We've been a little bit faster on the draw. On the other hand, the president really does not seem to have shown the kind of willingness to come out and explain to Congress and to the American people. I mean, that's one of the most important things. When you send Americans into a battle, even if they're up at, 40,000 miles in the sky, 40,000 feet in the sky.
There are 40,000 miles we really have to worry about.
Really have to worry. You're still risking lives, and we did lose a plane. And so I think he really does owe to the American people coming out and telling us what we're there for, what we hope to accomplish. And regime change, I think many people would like to see that, but we have to know what's going to follow.
But one person's dithering is another person's caution. And I think that what he has done here that is right and will serve us well is that we went in with a large coalition of our allies, and that we're not doing this alone. There is a lot of support for going after, at least stopping Gaddafi. And so there were costs to delay, but I think there were some real benefits to the way he approached it.
There was a letter waiting for President Obama when he got back from his Latin America trip from Speaker John Boehner, Speaker of the House, wondering about a number of questions, among them, were military resources committed to war without clearly defining what the mission is? And do you think, Linda Chavez, that this conference call with Republican leaders and Democratic leaders today goes some distance in resolving those questions?
Well,
I
think
it's too little, too late.
It's the beginning of a conversation, but of course, the problem is that we were busy consulting with the Arab League. We were, in fact, pursuing action in the United Nations, but we weren't talking to members of Congress. And I think that is a problem for President Obama. And I think he does have to mend some fences. And certainly the irony is that it's probably going to be the Republicans who are going to be, the biggest supporters of military action, and his own Democrats who may, in fact, be less willing to support. So he should not be alienating them in this process.
EJ?
Well, I think some Republicans would be against anything that Obama did. Indeed, although he claims he was consistent, Newt Gingrich seemed to be against him when he was acting and when he wasn't acting. But I think that what you're seeing here is a very different kind of foreign policy array of positions, because I think liberals are split between those who are very uneasy with intervention altogether and those who support humanitarian intervention. I think you're also seeing the reemergence of an isolationist or a non-interventionist wing of the Republican Party. They were kind of under wraps under Bush, and they really didn't challenge intervention much. Now that Obama's president, they are out there expressing what I suspect was their view back when President Bush was in office.
I want to talk to you both about new census data that came out this week that show a dramatic jump in the Hispanic population of the country, up from 35 million in 2000, now up to 50 million. Hispanics now make up 16% of the population. And if you look at the population younger than 18, it's actually 23%. EJ, lots of implications of this, but one of them is political. What do you see the impact being?
We've already seen a lot of impact. For example, if you look at where there are large Latino populations, California was pushed from being a swing state to being a solidly Democratic state by the Latino population. Colorado and Florida were pushed from Republican-leaning states to being swing states, especially Florida. And if you look at the nine states where the Latino population more than doubled, one of the important ones is North Carolina. That Latino vote helped Barack Obama carry North Carolina. The other sphere I think they're going to be important in is labor. We're celebrating or honoring this week the Triangle Shirtwaist fire in New York, where so many immigrant workers were killed. It led to a reform of workplace safety laws and spurred the trade union movement. I think if unions are going to make a comeback in the country, Latinos are going to be in the vanguard, as they have been in both California and New York.
And Linda Chavez, this is something you've been writing about for some time now. What do you see with these new numbers?
Well, it's very interesting. In fact, there has been this big increase, and it's driven by two factors. One is immigration, both legal and illegal, but also by higher birth rates among Hispanics. Even college-educated Hispanics tend to have more children than comparably educated non-Hispanic whites. And so you have seen this burgeoning. But I think what EJ is talking about in terms of the political influence is going to be very interesting, because they were, in fact, Hispanics were, in fact, very instrumental in the 2008 election. I think they were part of, Obama's success was a bigger than average Hispanic turnout. But President Obama has not delivered on immigration reform, and I think there are many in the Latino community who are not happy about that. He went off for this little tour in South America, but he hasn't delivered the goods on immigration, so they may not show up come November 2012.
Okay. Linda Chavez, EJ Dionne, thanks to you both. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Linda Chavez is a syndicated columnist and chairwoman of the Center for Equal Opportunity. EJ Dionne is a columnist with The Washington Post.
This is NPR News.